To our main speaker, Linda S. from the North Carolina area of Narcotics Anonymous.
I'm a grateful recovering addict.
Amen.
I swear to God, every time I do this, I start crying. I start crying because I'm grateful. I'm grateful to be alive. I got 26 years and 4 months clean. Telling you, newcomer, you need to know it's been a bumpy ride. You understand? I didn't come in here looking the way I looked. You understand? Wait, let me go back. I just want to thank the committee for picking a person like me. A person who sometimes believes that I'm not even worthy of standing up here on the podium. But God knows what he's doing. You understand? God is beyond human comprehension. I want to thank you for picking me. You understand? Because when I do things like this, I start to remember where I came from. I start to remember how I almost died many times in this process. 2 times in this process, that was many for me. You understand? I remember laying on my deathbed here when I had like 6 years clean. You understand? And listen, I came in here knowing that I was HIV positive. I'm going to talk to you about the being positive. I'm going to talk to you about the way I thought when I walked in here. I'm going to talk to you about the miracles that happened as a result of coming in here positive. How God took it and flipped it and turned my problems into his purpose. I walked in here 26 years ago. Matter of fact, I was all drunk. I had smoked reefer, drank over like 180 milligrams of methadone. And I said, you know how you get high and then you start crying? You know, you high and you crying. You know, and I'm crying. And now I need help. After I already picked up. So I picked up the phone and I started making some phone calls. And I called this line, which I thought was the AIDS hotline. And I told the lady, I said, I got the virus and I need help. I need a support group. She said, well, how did you get the virus, baby? I said, I don't know. You know, I shot dope, you prostituted a little bit, you know. And she said, well, how often did you shoot dope? I said, every day. Now, she's messing with my high now, okay? She asking too many damn questions, you know? But I keep moving on. I keep on, because I can't hang up. Because something in me. It talks about that something in the first step. It's something in me that's telling me you need help in spite of what your thinking says. So, I keep talking to her. And then she says, well, how often did you shoot dope, baby? I said, every day. She said, well, how many times a day? Every minute, every hour, every second. She said, well, how did you get your drugs? I said, prostituting. I stood on the street corner. She said, you got any track marks on you? I said, on my neck, my feet, my groin. You understand? My hands are swollen, my abscesses. Right in the midst of me talking, trying to describe these details, she said, hold up, baby. You don't need an AIDS hotline. You need Narcotics Anonymous. That's how I got here. Now, when I walked in here, my very first meeting was on Sterling Street in Brooklyn. So I walked into that meeting, and it was pitch black. If anybody knows that meeting up there, it was dark. They had kerosene lights. You know, I sat in the back. I said, I'm going to sit right in the back. I hope nobody knows me, you know. And I'm just listening for a little bit, and I'm going to leave. So I just listened for a little bit. And then when the meeting was over and people started coming towards me, you know, I started, you know, walking around and looking. People started coming towards me. I knew everybody almost in that meeting. I had shot dope with them. I had prostituted with them. Some of them were my tricks from the street. And I was like, and they was like, yo, Linda, welcome. I didn't want nobody to even know that I was there because that's how bad I looked. That's how ashamed I was. You understand? And what happened, it turned out to be like about 15 newcomers. All of us, they was like, listen, we're going to make meetings together. All of us. We're going to come to your house. I lived at Evans Field with my moms at that time when I was a newcomer. We're going to come to your house. We're going to pick you up every day. And we're going to take you to meetings. I said, why? You know, they said make 90 meetings in 90 days. That's what the guy was telling me. I said, no, they didn't. They said make one meeting every 90 days. You know? I know what I heard. And they was like, no, it don't go down like that. We picking your behind up every day. Now, I was real resistant to making meetings every day. I was like, I don't think I need a meeting. Mind you, my hands were swollen. I had track marks all on my neck. My eyes were yellow. I was beat down, tore up, but I didn't think I needed a meeting every day. I did not realize that I would still be standing and still coming to meetings diligently 26 years later. And those same newcomers that we all hung out together, it was 12 of us, there's only 2 of us left. Everybody else went back out, died, or went to jail, or went to institutions and just disappeared. I'm talking about the miracles that happen in here. So I'm walking in here, and all I'm worrying about is the fact that I got AIDS. You understand? Next thing I know, I turn around, and I am, listen, my 3rd year clean, I remember talking about suicide, talking about death. I don't like myself. I was thinking the way ever you thought about me. I'm thinking about self-discrimination, self-hate, all of this other stuff. All of that is inflicted in me now because I don't like me. I don't want to be here. I don't want to be clean. But God is a power something. Something's going on. He keeps drawing me to the meetings. Because where am I going to go? Back to the abandoned buildings? I can't go back to the abandoned buildings. I need to be near people just like me. And God knew that. You understand? But I didn't. But he kept moving my feet. He kept bringing me closer to the meeting. And I'm telling you, oh, God. And I came here, and I really didn't want to be here. I looked for everything to be wrong with this fellowship. You know, I was looking at the women. Y'all was pretty. Your hair was done. You understand? Your nails was done. Your face was shining. You was glowing. I was ashy. I was dirty. I still couldn't get that dirt off my hands because I had lived in an abandoned building for so many years. You understand? I couldn't get all of that off of me. And I was looking at y'all, and y'all was talking about kids. Kids. Y'all was talking about, and I had no kids. I had miscarried and stillborn babies, and every trick that I went out with, I wind up getting pregnant from. You understand? I remember being in the shooting gallery shooting dope and being 8 months pregnant. And I remember that I kept shooting the dope. You understand? And the baby kept kicking. And I'm like, oh, God. And I'm trying to get a hit. Eventually, I get the hit. I go into the NARD. When I wake up out of the NARD, the dead baby is in between my legs. You understand? Now I got this dead baby in between my legs. You know, I'm like, I killed my own baby. So I could have helped her. So I take the baby and I walk to the hospital. The way the doctors looked at me, it was in such a degrading manner. You understand? You think that would have made me say, I better get clean? No. I wanted them to hurry up, cut the umbilical cord, because I didn't listen. So the last thing I wanted, And they took the dead baby and put her in my arms. They said, look what you did. The doctor put the baby in my arms. And I took the baby and I set her down. I said, well, what y'all gonna do? They said, we're not even gonna tell you how we're gonna get rid of her. I went back out and I start using again. So I come in here and now y'all talking about babies. I don't wanna hear nothing about no babies. Y'all start talking about men, your husbands, your boyfriends. You know, I was molested at the age of 8. You know, I was raped at the age of 13, lost my virginity because I want to be a part of. I want to hang out with the kids in junior high school. They cut in school. I want to hang out with them. And they set me up. We all go to the house together. And they go in the back, go in the back. We're going to have fun back there. And they rape me. You understand? 13. My mother got rid of the baby with a hanger, you know? All this. So now I'm really now feeling rejected, not loving myself and all of this. So now you're talking about men? Let's talk about the prostitution and the men that I went with. Let's talk about the things, the beatings and the back alleys and the dark rooftops and the pissy hallways and all of that. The degrading. I remember going out with one, tricking with one and got raped by 8. I remember beating my man. Me and my man was using to get so-called man. But we was using together and I robbed him for the dope. Butt naked, he dragged me out in the street and beat the shit out of me. In the rain. So I'm saying, listen, I ain't going to stay on this too long, but I'm saying all of the things that God has, that I have gone, that I put me through. Because I blamed God for a long time. I said that God was my problem. I walked in here and I hated God. I cursed him. Why did you let me get molested? Why am I HIV positive? Why? But then y'all told me you better take ownership for your own behavior. So I'm talking about Narcotics Anonymous. Raise me up in here. Y'all stopped telling me, y'all told me take ownership for your own behavior. Boy, some predecessors in New York and some bad mama jammers. They not here today, but they still here in my spirit. I remember my first sponsor. She sponsored me 18 years. And I remember, listen, back then in 1989, 1990, all the 90s, they were rough. That they ain't had no cut on when they had something to say to you. You know? So now, I'm here, you know, years later, and I'm just going around here spreading the joy. I'm going out with girls, I'm going out with men, I'm tricking, you know, not tricking, but, you see that word keeps coming out real easy. You know? Now, Linda, you don't live like that no more, sweetie. It's been a long time. So I'm in here and I'm screwing everybody and all of this and I call my sponsor and I'm bragging, yo, you know, I'm having a good time, you know, they loving me and but I didn't know I was running from a feeling, trying to fill a void with a destructive rush, you understand? At the same time, now she's on the phone with me and it's Christmas time. So she starts singing, ho, ho, ho. Are you saying W-H-O-R-E or H-O? She said, you know what I'm talking about. You understand? I remember another predecessor told me, I was telling the predecessor that it was a building that I lived in, and it was quite a few of us that lived in that same building, recovering addicts. And I used to run to his house every day because he knew the literature real good. He was dying from AIDS, Tommy F. And he was telling me a whole lot. About the literature. And I was like 30, 40 days clean and stuff like that. And then I remember we all went to a meeting and me and him and you know, some other people, we were coming home and walking to the house. And I was saying, I wish these 16-year-old kids, like, leave me alone. He turned around to me and he said, well, why don't you stop dressing like a 16-year-old? And then you won't attract them. I was like, damn, y'all rough up in here. the thing about it is, no matter how rough they was, they was loving and caring. There was still something empathetic and compassionate about them. I'm talking about those new, man, those old timers saved my life. I'm talking, oh man. And I'm going to keep saying like that every now and then, because it's just like that spiritual rush that I get whenever I start talking about that. Because I'm a person, man, that was real bummy when I got here. That sat in the meeting. I detoxed right here in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. I detoxed from 180 milligrams of meth, dope, coke, methadone, alcohol, caffeine, all at the same time. So once my whole, they called me. Predecessors called me on the phone. They started asking me late at night, are you okay? Because I was detoxing from the methadone. I have been on the methadone over 20-something years. And I came in here to detox. And they was calling me in the middle of the night. Are you okay? You can't sleep? I didn't get a full day, a full night's sleep for over a year. You understand? They kept rubbing my back in the meetings. They kept telling me, listen, it's okay to shake, rattle, and roll, spit, sweat, and stink while trying to listen to a message of hope. You understand? They said, just keep coming back. Don't leave before the miracle. They said, it's going to be okay, Linda. Learn to listen and listen to learn. Newcomer, don't leave before the miracle. Because things started happening to me. Oh, my God. I'm talking about God started taking me in different directions. Am I thinking that AIDS is my problem? I'm sharing at my third anniversary. And then I asked this lady, Sarah R., to get up and share for me. And she gets up and says, Linda keeps talking about suicide. But she needs to know this is a life-saving program. We don't talk about death in here. We talk about life. She blew my mind. She said, I got something for you. She told me to call this number. You understand? But I knew how to follow directions. Y'all said jump, I jumped. Y'all said hi, I said hi. Whatever y'all told me to do, I did. Because I didn't know how to think. I didn't know how to walk. I didn't know how to act. I didn't even know my place. And I didn't know what my bra size, my panties. I didn't know nothing. Remember, I had lived in abandoned buildings for so many years. And then I get here, and I need you. I depend on you. So I call this hotline that she told me to call. And it wind up being a whole bunch of women just like me. All these women were HIV positive from Germany. And she said, the lady told me to tell her about myself. Now, mind you, when I tested positive in 1985, I almost jumped on the train track. I stood at the edge of the train telling myself, jump. Because discrimination was so rampant back there. Nobody was talking about things like that. Matter of fact, people was getting killed behind things like that in certain states and countries. So now I'm here, and I'm in a room where I feel safe. I'm in a room where I can open up, because y'all told me in the fourth step, you no longer have to, invent yourself, you know? I can't think right now, but God's going to work it through, you know? You no longer have to be the person that you invented. You now have the freedom to be yourself. There you go. So then I come in here and I start talking to y'all. Sherry said, call this line. I call the line, and it winds up being an international organization. From that one phone call, I wind up being the United States representative, an advocate for people with AIDS all over the world. Now, I couldn't read, I couldn't write, you understand? I had lost all my faculties from being out there for so long, but now I'm here, and I got to travel all over the world, and y'all told me that they told me on the phone, meet us at JFK. I didn't even know what JFK was. I came back to Narcotics Anonymous, and I asked y'all, they want me to meet them at JFK, these people. What is that? And y'all had to tell me it was the airport. I get to the airport, you know, and the red cap tries to take my bag, and I try to fight him. What are you taking my bag for? I didn't know anything about social skills. I didn't know anything about communication. When I was out there prostituting, we didn't communicate. Yo, you want to go out, babe? You understand? You got $5? You got $10? I'm talking about degrading situations that serve no purpose other than to use. But now I'm at the airport, and I meet all these women. And at the first place we travel to is Germany. Okay, so now I'm in Germany. I am a happy camper. I am not in the abandoned buildings no more. I'm in the world. I'm traveling. They said, stay together. All of you guys got to stay together. I don't know. They didn't even explain why we all got to stay together in a group. But I don't know how to follow directions. I'm an addict. So we get to the conference, and I separate from the group. I'm in West Berlin with 3 years clean. You know, I can't read, can't hardly write. And I'm walking around like I'm in a nut. Oh, this is fabulous. I love this. Oh, my God. You know, this is a whole new world for me, man. All of a sudden, I get on the train. I can't understand the language that they'd all written all on the walls and whatnot. I get off the train. And I see all this artwork, all this graffiti. And I'm looking at the graffiti, and I said, because I'm an artist by nature. And I'm looking, I said, wow, that is cool. I like that picture. I like this picture. And every it's caricatures of people. But it says when they were born and when they died. You understand? And I'm saying, well, wow, this one's a white person. This one's black. This one is a Mexican. This one is Japanese. And next thing I know, I feel presence standing behind me. When I turn around, it's the skinheads. So, what you gonna do now, Linda? Now, since you didn't want to listen to direction, so I start walking real fast. They walking real fast behind me. I go into McDonald's, and I knew the big M, so that's all I knew. I said, that might be safe. I go into McDonald's and stand online like I'm waiting for a Big Mac or something. They standing behind me. They start pushing me. They said, I had long braids then. Girls start pulling my hair. I turn around, I see the cops over there. But the cops are just eating their Big Mac looking like, I'm entertainment. This is entertainment. Nobody's helping. Now I'm reflecting back on the pictures where they talking about when the people was born and when the people died. So I'm saying, oh, I hope I'm not going to be on that wall. So immediately, I go into street mode. Mama Jamma, wait, y'all better stay. Keep your hands away from me. How dare you touch me? In the meantime, I'm backing out the door. You understand? They coming after me. I'm talking about somebody that ran so fast. You understand? I didn't even forget that part. I learned that from the streets. I remembered that from the streets. I started running and running all the way back to the hotel. They chasing me. I get to the hotel and then I say, listen, I got to call my sponsor. I got to call. Listen, I'm in West Berlin and I got to call back to New York. You know, I call her and she said, don't you know this is long distance? So I said, wait a minute, I almost got killed. She said, what happened? I told her what happened. She said, I'm going to tell you three things. Stay with your group, follow directions, and listen to the sound. Click. Do you know how many B.I. you know what I called her? So now I'm with all these girls from different countries. They drink, they smoke, they sniff. They don't care the fact that they got the virus, but they just having the ball. They living life. And we all bunking together in different rooms, like maybe four of us to a room. So I said, wait till I know what to do. I got a bright idea. When they finished partying and they came up to the room, I said, yo, girls, you know what? I need let's hang out with me tomorrow because there's a bunch of guys I want y'all to meet. I didn't tell them that I had made a phone call. Right after I called the sponsor, I started making some other phone calls. So they say, oh, man, men, yeah. So they start following me. You understand? The next day, we all go to this place. When I open the door, it says Narcotics Anonymous on the door. When I opened up the door, the people, all Germans, were sitting around the table. They looked at us, and they started smiling. You know, half of them still looked like they had a hangover. Wig was all to the side and whatnot. They knew that we belonged. I walked in there. We sat down. I didn't understand nothing they were saying. Nothing. They was talking. I was just watching the body language, the facial expressions. You know, some would cry. I was crying when some of them started crying. I didn't know why I was crying. You know, I was just crying because I was glad to be there. I needed to be in Narcotics. I needed to be in a safe place. You know? And then we turned around. At the end of the meeting, they closed the meeting. When they went to close the meeting, they all put their arms around each other. One of them nodded his head at the other one. And then, I remind you, remember, I didn't understand nothing they said. But when they closed, they said, all together they chimed, keep coming back. Yeah, I remember, there were so many different experiences. I remember another time we went to Cape Town, South Africa. I must have had about 4 years clean then. It was such a spiritual experience. And I couldn't even spell the word spiritual when I got here. But it was that feeling. The literature says knowledge of God's will is less of a knowing thing and more of a feeling thing. So now I'm in Cape Town, South Africa, and we got to so-called educate all these women. So we in the village with all the babies, all the sick babies in the pen, all the women, and they showing me all about their culture, bringing me into their homes. And I'm learning so much. And I said, Sarah sent me over here for a reason. I couldn't figure out why am I here. But then the light bulb went off again. I'm talking about the spirit awakening. When I started seeing how happy they were. And I was the one that was talking about death in New York. I was the one that was talking about I didn't want to be here. I didn't want to stay clean. Y'all wasn't doing what I wanted you to do. You wasn't walk, talk, acting and shitting the way I wanted you to do. You understand? And now I'm over here and they happy. They grateful. They not even thinking about the future. I'm all in the future, all in my head. They ain't got the disease of addiction. You understand? I learned from them that the worst disease that I ever could possibly have is the disease of addiction, which is my thinking. It was my that distorted perception of reality, that inappropriate response to people, places, and things. So as the ladies started talking to me, I stayed over there about 2 weeks. I had to meet with them every day, every day, every day. And I'm steady educating them. Towards the end of the presentation of being there with them, they started educating me. They said, you came over here to give us a message, but let me tell you about our culture. Because everything you do in the United States doesn't work for us over here in Cape Town, South Africa. When they started telling me about their culture, that's when I realized the diversity of the different people and the different cultures. I realized that it didn't work here. It worked here, but it didn't work there. So I still kept interacting with them and interacting with them. They started showing me all around. And they started showing me all around Cape Town, South Africa. There's a mountain in Cape Town called Tabletop Mountain. And I was petrified of heights. But the women said, look, come on, we're going to take the trolley and go all the way up. And when I got all the way on the mountain, I'm 4 years clean now. And I'm on the top of the mountain, I'm looking down. And I'm saying, damn, I'm really in Africa. And I'm looking at all the little, everybody looks like an insect. And then I reflect back into the abandoned buildings and the buckets and no toilet paper, no running water, you know, and cleaning myself in the Johnny pump, you know. And I didn't eat, like people said they ate out of the garbage can. I lived in an abandoned building upstairs. People lived upstairs. So every day I would go upstairs and I would knock on the door and say, can I have your leftovers? You understand? And they would give me their leftovers because I didn't have any food. I remember Thanksgiving, my mother came looking for me in the abandoned building. I remember her knocking on the door. Yeah, we had a door in the abandoned building. And I opened up the door and she was standing there and she was like, I didn't raise you like this. I don't even know who you are. I'm talking about the way she looked at me. Like, pierce me. Like, you could have stabbed me with a knife that would not have hurt as much as that look on her face. That was towards the end for me. Just my look and the disappointment. But now I'm 4 years clean. I'm on Tabletop Mountain and I'm reflecting on my past. And I'm realizing how... Listen, y'all say don't pray for specifics because you'll miss the magnitude of God's magnificence. But I did pray for specifics. I wanted to get clean. I wanted to stop putting the needle in my neck. I wanted those hands to go down because they were so big and swollen. You understand? I got here. Those trips were phenomenal. That was the best experience that Sarah could have ever had. I remember going to to a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist said, why you keep talking about death? Why you talking about death and death is nowhere even near you? I said, damn, why I pay you? Sarah told me the same shit last week. I got that same information from Narcotics Anonymous. In 1996, when I came back from Africa, I got sick. No, let me go back. A lot of predecessors started dying in here. I thought I had strength enough to deal with it. I thought y'all had prepared me because Tommy F. used to say, he said, Lynn, let me tell you something there. And no, let me just check this. Let me say this while it comes to my mind. This is not an AIDS story. This is a story about miracles. This is a story how God will take something that is your most weakest area in your life and make it become like you become the advocate for others who are just like you. This is a story where he takes you somewhere beyond your thinking, beyond your beliefs. Now all of a sudden you're traveling all over the world and you're doing things to help people just like you. But in the beginning, I remember in 89 when my boyfriend told me he was positive, how I told him, don't come home. Don't come near me. Don't kiss me. You understand? And then God said, oh, for real? Now I want to see what's going to happen when you're in his shoes. Now I'm in his shoes. And now I got to advocate for the people. He puts me in a position to advocate for other people just like me. Now I'm advocating for them, but I'm still got death on my mind because I don't want this. But y'all told me to take ownership of my behavior, whether I want it or not. I got to live with it and accept it. She said, read the pamphlet, Self-Acceptance, every day. She had me read every literature that had to do with self-acceptance. I got to the point when I was able, I remember JJ from Brooklyn, he used to, before he passed. He said, stop letting other people's defects wake yours up. You keep coming in here complaining about how the world is treating you. But what are you bringing to the world? What are you doing? So I'm talking about, man, how the predecessors was rough, but they told me some things that saved my life. So So now I'm getting sick. A mosquito bit me when I was in Africa. A mosquito bit me. I was 180 pounds here. When I walked in here, I was 160. 3 years later, I was like 200. I was eating, listen, food was good. I was eating all potato chips. I remember treating myself. I would come in here like I was at Saturday night at the Apollo. I would have all this big bucket of ice cream and Oreo cookies and listening to y'all with the message and getting fatter and fatter and fatter. The disease had moved from here, from the drugs into the food. Before you know it, I woke up. I was like 20, wearing a size 28. Y'all remember? Y'all remember how big and fat I was? You understand? And I, again, another reason to hate yourself even more. And then I went to Africa, got bit by a mosquito, come back here. Now I had lost some weight. It kept going down and down and down. I was wasting. The mosquito bite, whatever was in it, had infected my immune system so bad that I was wasting. But, and mind you, the predecessors tried to prepare me for that. Tommy said, you need to know we will be dead and you, the great probability you'll still be alive. So that's when you need to get into these steps. You need to surrender in the first. You need to trust and believe in God in the fifth. You understand? He said, you need to keep your panties up and your dress down in the sixth and find some integrity. He said, you need to learn how to become obedient. You need to get some courage, because when you're sitting in front of that doctor and he diagnosed you with another disease on top of the disease, because I used dirty needles swarming around in bloody water. I prostituted with some of the most dirty, degrading tricks that you can. And I did that for over 20-something years. So now I'm here in Narcotics Anonymous, and all those diseases that I had out there is starting to wake up in here. But thank God they all happened in here, because if it happened out there, I don't think I would be standing up here. So now I'm dealing with these illnesses. I'm wasting. My sponsors, that, you know, she don't see me in the meetings. She start calling everybody. She start coming to the house. I open the door. She seen how little I was. They came in and started taking care of me. They took me to the hospital. The nurse, let me tell you about services, the posture and the heart. I'm talking about, you can have a degree but without any passion. You can have a title without the time for the sick and suffering. You can have a job, your own business, but forget how you got it. You can have all these titles, but if you ain't got the empathy, the compassion, and the love, you ain't got nothing. You can reach your goal, but miss your purpose. So, I'm in the hospital, and the nurses are not nice. That's how I come to that conclusion. All these degrees, and they nasty as hell. To the sick and suffering. For real, I'm 99 pounds. You see the muscles, you see the bones protruding from my chest. Y'all remember from New York. Y'all remember me coming back into the meetings. You understand? You know, couldn't barely walk. But y'all helped me to my feet. Couldn't barely talk. But y'all rubbed my back. Y'all let me share. I raised my hand. Y'all picked me. I said, I'm dying. But guess what? Just for today, I'm living. Y'all gonna help me. Because God sent y'all to help me. And y'all helped me. You understand? Y'all did. Listen, I remember being in the hospital and some women came to my bed. These were the women I did not like. I had cursed out. I had fought in the meetings. I had screwed their man. Yes, I go both ways. I screwed their women. You know, I did all types. Listen, I talked about them. I gossiped about them. Now I'm in the hospital. I'm in the hospital. I ain't got no teeth in my mouth. My face is all shrunken, bones sticking out of my skin. You could see it through my skin. And I listen the night before, I'm crying. And the lady in my roommate, she's trying to calm me down. Repeat after me. She's quoting stuff from the Bible. I don't know what she's talking about. But I'm repeating after. Whatever you want me to do, I'm going to do. And then the women walk in the rooms. And I bust out crying. These are the same women. Listen, these are the same women that I had shitted on. The journey continues, says we don't have the luxury to choose who's going to save our lives. I'm talking about I ain't got the teeth in my mouth. One girl comes over and I ain't put the teeth in. I can't put the teeth away. You got it in the wrong way. Wait a minute. Yeah. And this is a girl I done screwed her husband so many times, got in a meeting and bragged about how he was spending all his money on me. Now she's putting the teeth in my mouth and she combing my hair down. And I'm talking about service is a posture in the heart. Yes. I'm talking about my skin is falling off. I'm malnutrition. I'm dehydrated. And another girl out of school, her girlfriend, you understand? And she's rubbing lotion all on my body and talking about, I love you, Linda, in spite of who you are and what you did. You understand? She don't care. I'm talking about forgiveness in the ninth step. I'm talking about another one that's changing my diapers. I'm defecating on myself and all this. And she's literally got her mask on, her gloves on, and she's changing my diapers. And I hit that bitch in the meeting. Knocked her out in the meeting in St. Mark's. But now she's taking care of me, saving my life. Excuse me for cursing. I'm going to try to stop cursing. She shake her head. It's okay. No, it's not. So that's the love. That's what y'all showed me. I had came in here and I set up a support group for women because there was a whole lot of women back in the 90s that wasn't sharing about their status. And I'm going to get off that and go and tell you how God took me into another direction. You understand? They wasn't sharing about their status. And then so I had this group in my home. Every Sunday they was coming to my home and they was sharing. I was doing all these things. I was writing proposals. I didn't even know I was able to do this. I had learned on the internet something. Somebody was showing me something. And then I'm writing these proposals trying to get money for these women so that they can go to these different conferences and learn about how to take care of their own sick babies and their own self. And that's when you do things with motives. Because my motive was that if I get sick, that they'll be there for me. But when I got sick, they turned their back on me. It was the people in Narcotics Anonymous that stepped up to the plate. I'm talking about when I told my mother when I was here, she said, good for you. She said, I'm glad you got that thing. She said, if it wasn't for, you know, if it was up to me, you wouldn't have got it because you should have listened to me. I went and I told my sponsor what my mother said. She said, don't kiss me in the mouth. Don't hug me. Don't touch my plates. You understand? The same thing I had told the dude many years ago. The tables had turned. Now I was in his shoes. So I was feeling what he was probably feeling. So now I'm sitting there and I go tell my sponsor. She said, Linda, I don't hear what you hear. I said, well, what do you hear? She said, you hear the pain. She said, you hear, like, her mean, that she's being mean. I don't hear that. She said, I'm a mother. What I hear is guilt. I hear that your mother feels guilty. That she feels like she wasn't a good parent. that she, you know, listen, I had to really do a fourth step on my mother because I hated her for such a long time. And when I got to the point, I started to realize, wait a minute, I started doing the calculation. My mother had me at the age of 16. I didn't even realize that till I did my fourth step. She didn't have the ability to love and all that kind of stuff like that because my grandmother was never available. She was running all over the world and gambling. She was a gambler-holic. You know, she was a, my mother had, went through some stuff. She had, she used to clean toilets and she was raped. She came home crying on the phone to my grandmother and I was like a little kid and I was listening. And my real maternal father, when I met him, he was had a relationship with dope and then died from an overdose. My stepfather, he had a relationship with alcohol and then died from cirrhosis of the liver. So how did everybody was dying? My sister, who I used with, prostituted with, did everything with, and then she came in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous and stayed here a year and decided this wasn't going to work for her. She got sick, went to the hospital. Remember, we prostituted together, so she had the virus too. She went to the hospital and called Flacco. Flacco brought her some dope that mixed up with the medicine from the hospital, and she died. She never made it out of the hospital. So she was worried about dying from HIV, and it was the disease of addiction that took her out. So those were the things that my mother had to go through. So how did I expect her to act when her oldest daughter told her the same thing? She done lost everybody from the disease of addiction, and here I come telling her this. So my sponsor had to show me all that in this fourth step. So my perception started changing. I started viewing my mother different. Y'all started molding my heart. My heart wasn't hard no more. It wasn't cold. It wasn't full of malice. Now it was molding into love and empathy and compassion. I was going in a whole different direction now. So I started getting better, mentally, physically, and spiritually. Now, I decide that I want to do something different. I want to go back to school. I can't read, I can't write, right? So I want to go back to school. I hear something on the radio that talks about being teachers. So I want to become a teacher. So I come in here and I start talking to y'all about it. I want to be a teacher. So y'all said, lost dreams awaken, new possibilities arrive. You can be whatever you want to be. You understand? So I'm listening to you. Okay, mind you, I still got a warrant. I got a rap sheet. I got all these things holding me back that I think is holding me back. But I didn't know they were all stepping stones. So I go and I take the teacher's test. I took the test 10 times. I kept failing and failing and failing and failing. Just because I'm failing now, I'm feeling like a failure. I'm in the meetings and I'm crying again. I'm failing that this ain't working for me. And y'all, the one dude said, if I was you, I would stop doing it. Just listen, maybe it ain't for you. I said, check this out, you ain't me. All the stuff that I went through out there, the beatings and the rapes and all of that and the dirty needles and I persevered through that. So why not persevere in another? Y'all talking about from desperation to passion. Why not take it in a whole different direction? I had to change my way of thinking. Sarah sent me to Africa to learn about the underprivileged so I could learn that I am privileged, that I have the privilege to do other things. So now I want to go to school and I want to do these, but these kids, man, I'm old. I'm like 36, 37, something like that. I think that's old. At that time I did. I'm older now. So now I'm older. I feel younger. And I keep failing the test. I'm in a scholarship program, y'all. They're paying for everything. I remember sharing in the meeting, I want to go back to school, but I ain't got no money. I think I'm going to try to do the scholarship thing. Somebody raised their hand behind me and starts talking about the seventh tradition. I said, seventh tradition? What that got to do with anything? You understand? And other people was like, yo, and they debating about what I just shared. Another person shares, oh, you can do it, you can get a scholarship, all you got to do is apply yourself. No, she ain't got it. She needs to start getting her own bills, getting her own money, paying her own way. And I'm like, what the hell? I done created some shit up in here. But these are my dreams. So in the meantime, I follow my spirit. So I follow my spirit, and guess what? They let me into the scholarship program. They didn't know I couldn't read that well. Because guess what? What got me into it? My ability to speak. They put me in front of a whole bunch of panel of people and said, everybody out there are kids. Act like they're children and think of a lesson right now what you would teach. Immediately, because we addicts. Creative? What? Oh, I got up there and performed. Yo, let me tell you, and this is how we gonna do this. And I had them laughing, and they said, that's how you gonna teach your class? I said, hell yeah. They said, you're hired. That means the kids ain't gonna be bombed, they ain't gonna be going to sleep and all. I said, thank you. But I didn't know that was gonna be another journey and another chapter in my life. I didn't know he was going to take me to some new horizons there. I thought I was coming in there to teach the kids, but the kids taught me. I started teaching, My warrant came down. My rap sheet came down. In the middle of the class, and I'm teaching, I get a phone call. We have phones in the classroom. I pick up the phone, Department of Investigation. This is how ignorant and illiterate I was. Department of Investigation. Oh, I had applied for so many jobs, I'm thinking they want me. Oh, they want me. That must be another city job. Maybe I could do 2-3 jobs. You understand? It was the department. She said, no, baby. We don't want you like that. We want you to come down to the office. We found your rap sheet. Oh, shit. I wonder what they reading. I never even seen a rap sheet. So I start reflecting on all the stuff that I did, how many times I got arrested and jails and mental institutions and all this. I wonder if all that's on there. So I go down there and I sit and I'm nervous as hell. And she's talking to me. I got 11 years clean. She's talking to me like I just walked off the host row. She's talking to me like in such a condescending manner. Why should we give people like you a job? What? Why should we let you teach our kids? I'm astounded because nobody hasn't talked to me like that since I got clean. Now, the trick to talk to me and the people out there in the streets when I was using talked to me any kind of way, but I did whatever they told me to do to get the next one. But now I'm clean and she's talking to me like that, and I'm getting mad. I'm not feeling that one. So I just sit there and I say, okay. She said, you write a synopsis as to why we should let people like you teach our kids. I don't even know what a synopsis is. What the hell are you talking about? But I said, yes, okay, because I know all I got to do is come back to Narcotics Anonymous. Y'all going to tell me what the synopsis is. What? Y'all going to tell me whatever I don't know. What? I come back to Narcotics Anonymous, I said, help! They want a synopsis. They want, then my warrant came. She read the stuff. She said, and your name was Mary Jane Allen in 19 so-and-so. Your name was Helen. My name is Linda Small. I don't even know what you're talking about. I don't know who that person is. You know, she said, it's you. I come here and then some of y'all start raising your hand. Y'all say, You ain't unique. You know, all of us work for the city, and we all got, you're talking about some shit that I was like, oh my God. And you still work for the city? Y'all came to McDonald's or getting McDonald's. At the end of the meeting, and y'all showed me how to write the synopsis. Y'all gave me ideas. Where your mom work? I said, my mom's work for the precinct. Get your moms to write a letter for you. What? For real? Yeah, you got any other relatives who work for the police department? I think I got two nephews that they are detectives. I don't know them, though. I was using, but I'm going to make some phone calls. My mom said, yeah, you got two nephews who are detectives. Get them to write a letter. I didn't know those kids. They were kids when I was using. So they never even seen my whole history. But I used with their uncles, with the mother and the father, which was uncles and aunts. My uncles and aunts that robbed me when we was out there, but that's a different story. And so they wrote the synopsis and all of that. How am I doing with time? Okay. Oh, wow, I got to wrap it up. Okay. All right, because I got some real important stuff to tell y'all. You know, so I think I need to talk a little faster. Okay? Love you, too. But, okay, so the lady didn't want people like me to teach her kids, right? So, but y'all, too, I started telling y'all some stuff. Y'all helped me write the synopsis. So I wrote the synopsis and whatnot. I sent it to the lady. She looked at it, read it, and whatnot. She called me back the next day in the classroom, and she said, listen, you can become a coach. You can become assistant principal. You can have your own school. You can do whatever you want, and we will never mess with you again. In the meantime, I'm like, yes! So I'm teaching these kids. I'm teaching these kindergarten kids, you know? And now I got them marching with me. You know, I'm all happy. I still don't know how to dress. You know, I ain't got no bra on. Everything is hanging down to the knees. You know, the wig is all cocksided. You know, I still don't know how to dress, but I'm going to school like this to teach the kids. Principal pulled me aside and said, listen, you got any high heels and stockings? You know? So I was like, why? Something wrong with me? Yes. How about your apparel? Don't come to work looking like that no more. I'm back to N.A. I need help with learning how to put on stockings and high heels, you know. Can y'all help me with that? I'm talking about service. It's a posture in the heart. The full fruit of the labor of love lives in the harvest, and that always comes in this right season. You understand? So now it's coming out in this right season, the harvest, the results that y'all embedded within me. So I'm teaching these kids. I take the kid to all the kids to the cafeteria, kindergarten. But I'm getting sick again. My belly is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. One of y'all tapped me on the shoulder in the meeting and say, baby, you're getting sick again. Go back to the doctor. But I refuse. I prefer to go to work because I'm scared of going home and going through all that I went through back when I had 6 years clean. Now, in the meantime, I take the kids to the cafeteria. They in the cafeteria. And I go and lay on the floor in the classroom. I'm on the floor in the classroom, and I hear a knock on the door. I open the door. It's one of my kindergarten kids. He done walked, the little gangster, 60-year-old, done walked around the whole cafeteria, collected everybody's vegetables, give me your peas, your carrots, all of these mashed potatoes, all of this on one plate, brought it back to the classroom to give it to his teacher, because he was watching me. He was watching his teacher dwindling away, getting sick, and the belly getting bigger. He went home and told his mother, my teacher is dying. That's why I said I thought I was coming in there to teach them, and they wind up teaching me. Because he gave me the plate, and he said, listen, my mommy told me that you got to eat your vegetables to stay clean. So I'm going to tell you that you got to eat your vegetables to stay alive. Because we need you. That was something that really, that did something to me. I went to the doctor. I remember being on the doctor's bed, cirrhosis of the liver. You understand? Now I got some education. Now, but that ain't helping me now because the disease of addiction did all this. My performance threw out the disease, my sinking. So now I'm on my deathbed. My belly is big. They sticking needles in there. And I'm screaming and I'm hollering. They said, listen, sedate her. So they put me under sedation, and they all stand, my doctor's standing around, the nurses, the interns, and they talking about my death. They talking about me dying. They talking about all of this stuff. You know, listen, the HIV didn't kill her, but we think she had this cirrhosis, this liver thing, hepatitis B. You know, which turned to cirrhosis of the liver. We think she had that over 30 years. So it's a great probability. But remember, now I can't listen to you no more. I got to start talking to him. I got to start talking to him because y'all did something to me. I wanted to die when I first got here. I was angry with God. But now I was calling on God because I had got closer to God in the 11th step. It was this conscious context. So I'm saying, listen, God, help me. I don't think this is the end, and I don't want it to be the end. And he said, if you can look up, you can get up. So he took me through all of these, but I didn't realize everything that I went through in life, I was supposed to go through. Everything that I went through in life brought me closer to God. Everything that I went through in life showed me who I am. Showed me where I belong in this world. Because I didn't know where I belong. So now I'm at a place that they send me back to teach high school kids. Whole different culture. Now these are gangbangers. Kids run gangs. Kids using drugs, kids selling drugs, you understand, a whole different population. So now I don't know how to teach them, but my sponsor said, listen, 12 steps, helping others is the highest aspiration of the human heart, entrusted in us as a result of having a higher power working in your life. You got one? Yes, I do. Well, then use them. Mind you, I started teaching those kids through what I learned. In here. What I learned out there. I got to teach mathematics now. So I come in the classroom with dice. What the hell? I got dice in my pocket. I got cards. I watch y'all play spades when y'all have the group anniversaries. You understand? So I done sat and devised all these plans on how to teach kids. But throwing the dice, bam, throw it down. What's the probability? What's the probability of getting a 6 and 11? You know, I'm teaching them all of this, but guess what? It's working. I got their attention. And now these kids are passing the state test through stuff that I learned from the streets. Stuff that I learned. They are special ed kids are passing the state test when the regular ed kids are not. Now the principal wants to know, how are you doing that? I don't know. I can't explain it. You cannot define a spiritual experience. You can't define it, but you can describe it. So the kids are graduating. They on the stage. They doing their thing. They getting honors and awards and certificates. For real. You understand? And then they get up there and say, I want to thank my gangster teacher. Miss Small. Now, mind you, the whole time they teaching, I'm protecting them. You know, they outside in the hallway cafeteria, all of that stuff in the hallway, beating each other up, breaking the vending machine, punching their fists through the vending machine. See, let me see if you could do it harder than me. Bam. The principal wants to suspend them, and I'm like, no, 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 no. These are my babies. Mind you, I didn't have kids. I didn't have kids. Remember my story. But God gave me your kids. I wasn't trying to send them back. I was trying to help them. My job, what I found out, was for me to mainstream them, to take them from special education into regular education. Majority of those kids are no longer special ed kids. They are regular ed kids. That was my job. That was my job because that was my assignment. That was my assignment. Go back to school. Learn something so that you can teach somebody else. Give back what was so freely given to you. I'm talking about service as a posture in the heart. You understand? I couldn't read when I got here. I'm talking about a bachelor's degree in computer science, a master's degree in mathematics, another master's degree in education. And then they offered me a free PhD. But I turned the PhD down. I'm going to tell you why. Because when I did my fourth step, I had to realize that my body, this little body, has been through so much out there in the war that I don't think I would be able to persevere through a PhD. Mind you, when I was getting a master's degree through the scholarship program, we had to meet in bars, and people's houses where they was passing the joint. So I was around people, places, and things. You understand? I had the wisdom to know the difference. So now I'm saying thank God that I know. I don't want to go back there. I don't want to learn about theory while sipping on a Heineken. You understand? I don't want to learn about all this intellectual so-called stuff. You understand? Because you don't need a degree to carry a message. The literature taught me that. You understand? The ancient tradition taught me that. You don't need a degree to carry the message, Linda. You've been doing your job. If I die today or tomorrow, you understand? I can say I live my life because y'all gave me a life. I didn't have a life when I got here. And that transformed into helping other people. And those kids, if I die today or tomorrow, don't get scared, newcomer. But there's a legacy that follows. I could be dead for 10 years and they say, Miss Small did this. Miss Small helped me to get not be, you know, special ed and have to work in warehouses all my life. Now they're able to get jobs like a police officer, like a correction officer, where they can carry guns and they can be productive members of the, hopefully they don't shoot nobody though. I'm talking about those teenagers. Listen. God took me in some amazing directions, man. And I just can't believe that how he flipped everything around. I'm talking about how desperate I was when I got here and I really didn't want to be here. And then he said, oh, for real? You don't want to be here? But there's an assignment attached to this gift. And so this gift is going to take you some places beyond your belief. You know? And then I started learning some stuff about me and started applying it to the kids. You know, last thing, the superintendent came into the classroom. She brought all these people with her to see how I was teaching the kids with the dice and the cards and all this stuff. You understand? They was writing everything that I was doing. So one of the other teachers, because they told me to teach the other teachers how to teach the kids. But I did it. You understand? But they couldn't get it because it wasn't their gift. You understand? If it's not your gift, I can teach you all you want. But you ain't going to be able to do it like me because it was my gift, not yours. And all of us got gifts. You understand? And every time, the more I taught, the more these different gifts kept coming up. Started learning more and more and more about me. But I'm going to shut this down right now. Before I left New York, I got a letter from the mayor. The mayor said, They do a tracking mechanism on all the teachers to see their progress, to see if they could fire you behind. And they did a tracking mechanism. And what they found out is that every class that I taught since I had been in the whole school system, that 3/4 of my kids had graduated with honors. And these were special needs kids. That last sentence he said, The last thing that he said was, thank you for your service. So when y'all call me for this workshop, this meeting, I said it ties right into my story. And what I learned, it said service, and I looked it up. Service is a posture in the heart. I looked it up. I'm real analytical right now. And it says service is not what you do. Service is who you are. Thanks for letting me share.